this week's service and next week's service are a pair, and so the readings this week and next week will actually be from the same person, who's Brené Brown. And if you've been coming for a while, you know I'm a big fan of Brené Brown. And if you are new this morning, you're about to find out I'm a big fan of Brené Brown. And this reading is actually just a few words that I caught from her on the radio. I'm looking for Dave Zarmack. There you are. I heard this on the radio, this interview on the radio, and then Dave, knowing that I'm a big fan of Brené Brown, sent me a link to the interview so I could listen to it over and over again. She's done a lot of research on things that we usually think of as fairly intangible. And what I'm about to read to you is the conclusion of that she has drawn from some of her research. I just want to emphasize that she's done a lot of research, because I just think it's fantastic to have what I'm about to say backed up by a lot of research. Stop walking through the world looking for evidence that you don't belong, because you will always find it. You carry belonging in your heart. You don't negotiate it externally. And no one belongs here more than you do. You just have to stop looking for evidence that you don't. I have called this pair of sermons, How Do We Do This Work? The work of church life, the spiritual work, the work of being human in the world right now. And what really is the work of the liberal church, the church that's open to change and fresh understandings? What is our work in the world right now? Well, my intuitive response to that question has been confirmed by what Brené Brown talks about with all of her research behind it. And she calls this moment a spiritual crisis of disconnection. So I think, I've long thought and appreciate her confirmation that the work of church, the purpose of church, is to help us experience the interconnectedness of everything. And then to train our hearts and minds to perceive and act differently in a world that looks and acts very fragmented. So we have to learn to offer something to the world that doesn't look like it's present. I think our work is to be secret agents of connection. And I think that those ways of being show up in the mission that this congregation wrote last year. If I had had a slightly different week, I would have a slightly larger font. Because if I can pass a third row, you can't read this, so I'll read it for you. At Fuse, we seek to build a caring, inclusive community where we can ground ourselves spiritually, pursue justice in the larger society, and work to heal the natural world. It's pretty big work. And that's what I think spiritual communities are for, is to take on pretty big work together. And it turns out that how we do things is as important sometimes as what we do, particularly when we're working with the intangible, the ephemeral, and the nuanced, as we are here. When you're literally taking out the garbage, what you do is probably more important than just exactly how you do it. But we're working with different things most of the time. So one of the things that Brené Brown says about being connected, about being agents of connection, is that we have to be vulnerable and real and messy and uncomfortable. And that's part of the training that we have to do with our minds and hearts, is learn to be open to feeling that way as part of being in the world, instead of trying to make it feel all right. It means being open to rearranging and to understanding that life is uncertain. So here is one of the examples from congregational life in which I think we're doing this. There was a meeting last week after the worship service to talk about our situation with the budget and how things are going to work out with our music program. And many people spoke. And there were a lot of different perspectives articulated in this room. Some challenging, some gentle, and definitely a great variety. And it was a little uncomfortable to be in the room and to hear what was said and to say what was said. More than once, someone said, "It's uncomfortable to say this." It was a pretty open conflict in the room as people shared their ideas. And here is what was amazing about it. People spoke their minds, and they did so pretty respectfully. They listened to each other. They listened to what other people said. I didn't hear anyone say that what someone else had to say was somehow not legitimate. I think partially because of our affection for Mary, we were able to remember each other's humanity as we talked from a whole variety of perspectives. That's what I heard in the room anyway. I know that other things might have been going on in your heads at given moments. But what we did, how we behaved in the moment, was to be able to be in the middle of a pretty difficult conflict and stay with each other. And that is one of the essential parts of having a healthy, vibrant community. Being a life-giving place of connection. As the microphone connection falters. Being a place of connection does not mean that there will not be conflict. It means having conflict honestly. Disagreeing right out in the open when things come up. Not pushing it down or letting certain groups of people go off on the side and have a conflict and then blame them for their decisions afterwards. That's a pattern you might recognize from, the national scene. Pretty human way to manage discomfort. I mean, it's super uncomfortable to be in conflict, especially when it's with people you love. It's just the most uncomfortable thing. But to stay in it and stay kind has gifts that keep coming. And I have noticed that people are beginning to have connections that they didn't have before we had an open conflict about this. Not saying that everyone is suddenly all connected, but that there are some understandings of each other that weren't present before. And that's one of the ways that connection can come from conflict. Does the fact that I think that we are navigating a conflict well right now mean that it's going to get resolved in a way that everyone will like? It's one of those questions that they ask you in history class and you know what the answer is. No, it doesn't mean that. That's one of the reasons that we're always hesitant to actually be in conflict, because we know that someone is not going to be happy with what happens. And especially when you love the people involved, you don't want that outcome. So just don't have the conflict, then you don't get to that outcome. So that's part of why it takes such courage and belief in the connections to have a conflict. So it's almost certain that whatever result we have from this particular conflict, there will be people who aren't happy with it. And I don't mean they won't be happy with any outcome. I mean, because I live with a 4.5-year-old, these are the metaphors I go to. If we're ordering ice cream, and it's either vanilla or black raspberry or chocolate, the chocolate lovers are not going to be especially pleased if we end up with vanilla. And the black raspberry people are probably not going to be too pleased if we end up with chocolate. And so there's going to be some negotiation among the possible outcomes. And there will be people who feel like the right answer was not arrived at. And I go to ice cream, as I said, partially because of my context, but also because it's such a concrete way to remember that in complex situations, it's not possible to please everyone. And that the goal can't be to please everyone or anyone in particular. So we all have to go into our work, whether the work of the moment is to be in a conflict or volunteering at Seacoast Family Promise, founded on our mission, our principles, our ideals, and do our best to orient ourselves by those. And even that doesn't mean that we're certain to get it right, which is why I've been talking a lot about learning recently. Because it's about continually re-engaging our connections and our mission. Because we'll miss. We'll see it differently in the short term and in the long term, and you can't see the long term sometimes until you're in it. So we'll keep learning slowly together, doing it imperfectly and trying again. And not giving up, because we value the connections that we can build. So I start talking about how we're going to do church work and the purpose of church, and then I talk about conflict. So am I saying that being in church is being in conflict? No, what I'm saying is that you can't have a church, that you can't have a human community. You can't have, I think, any community of living beings without there being conflict in it. If we are going to do things that are worth doing, we are going to have conflict. The old adage is, if you have more than one person in a room, you have conflict. In my own experience, you only need one person in a room for conflict to break out. And so, of course, it will happen here. And the challenge in the midst of the conflict is to keep reaching for each other, to not only remember each other's humanity, but to keep building connections. Because I think our work really is to show up in every moment as secret agents of connection. Everywhere, in the midst of a difficult meeting here, in the midst of coffee hour, in the midst of the grocery store, the library, while driving, at a family dinner, in the airport, all the places, to figure out how can I make a connection here. It's especially useful framing when you're in a moment where there's conflict. And most of the things that I just listed are places where you could find conflict if you were looking for it. And there's almost always some connection that you can find if you're looking. I want us to be a community that is pretty dogged about training ourselves to respond less to all of the possibilities out there that we might not belong or that someone else might not belong in a situation, and look for the ways that we're connected. The connections might not be the ones we're expecting. We might not belong to each other the way we think we should, but to keep looking for them. And then things start to go differently. Well, if you're going to train yourself, you have to think over and over again about how to go about that. And then we're going to go back to Brené Brown. Because I am a poet, but I come from scientists, I need my spiritual life to be connected to some data. Then I know that they're both reliable. And that's what Brené Brown does. She studies people's lives. She studies thousands and thousands of stories. She finds the patterns and connections among them. You might remember her definition of shame that I've shared before. I'm going to do the pop quiz thing. Can anyone remember that? I keep saying it over and over again because I want you to have it. It's one of the handholds in life. Shame is the fear that you are not worthy of connection. That you're not worthy of connection. Brené Brown is on a personal mission to get rid of that idea that anyone would not be worthy. And she's done a lot of work on vulnerability, which is connected. And now she's talking about belonging and connection. And so next week, when I dig in on how we do this work, how we get out there to be agents of connection, and by get out there, I mean get beyond our own selves in any setting. She has studied all these stories and has found that there are four patterns that people who are really good at living into their connections do. They're practices that they have. And she, of course, has given them names. And I'll tell you the names, and then we're going to dig in on them next week. People are hard to hate close up. So move in. Speak truth to BS, but be civil. Hold hands with strangers. Strong back, soft front. And I'll tell some stories for each of those next week. Although some of those names are, I think, explain themselves. And in the meantime, see yourselves as secret agents of connection. Risk liking people right out loud. Risk kindness even when it's awkward. And look for how we belong to each other.